From the shores of Summer Lake in Tigard, Oregon, it's the Portland Tim Beers Podcast, a show featuring two guys who love craft beer and Portland Timbers soccer. And now, here are your hosts, Jason and Gary.
Tim Beers. I'm Jason.
And I'm Gary.
We're the Portland Tim Beers. We talk about soccer, beer, and this time of year we talk skiing.
Yes, we do.
How you doing, buddy?
Doing pretty good. Just waiting for the air to open up.
Waiting for it to open up. Well, here we are, you and I, alone in the room, a couple beverages, Christmas music. I feel like I'm on a Hallmark movie.
Kind of sounds that way, too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Next thing you know, snow falls and I start proposing.
No.
How was your Thanksgiving?
That was actually really good.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Plenty of turkey?
Plenty. Plenty of turkey, plenty of fixings, plenty of all sorts of good stuff.
Good, good. Well, I'm throwing a beer at you here.
Okay.
This is a beer I was going to use for our advent calendar.
Looks dark.
But did not. Ah, shnikes. I know what I was going to do. I got another beer we're going to try.
Holy moly.
How was that?
No, I got to work early tomorrow. Long drive, long day. And you're giving me something that's probably in the 10 to 12% range.
No, this beer is like 5%.
Yeah. If that's 5%, it's pretty wicked 5%.
I don't even know what this is. Let's see. 12 ounces. This beer is called the Narwhal. Ooh.
The Narwhal, huh?
Yep. Called the Narwhal.
Interesting.
It's Sierra Nevada's Imperial Stout.
Okay.
2020 Narwhal. And it is in really fine print.
Of course.
I have no idea what it is.
Well, the narwhal is gnarly.
10.2%.
There you go.
Yeah, that's chump change. What do you think of the narwhal? Can you taste anything in it?
A lot of alcohol.
Yeah, it's boozy.
Dark roasting, but yeah. I can't pick out anything in particular as far as spice or anything like that they might have put in it.
Yeah, it's pretty roasty, pretty well balanced. This is it's nice because a lot of these imperial stouts these days are bourbon barrel this,
yes.
Port barrel that,
yeah.
And you get that boozy, oaky thing, which is fine, but not everybody has to do it.
No, exactly.
So I had the Bourbon County 2020 last night from Goose Island.
Okay.
And big deal, everybody talks about this, and it's good, but it's all bourbon. It's like they mixed it with a third of bourbon. And so I was a bit fearful on this, but this is nice. This is like Imperial Stout, straightforward, not a lot of wood at all. I don't taste any wood. It's all like roasty notes, and
yeah.
It's heavy grain bill. It's nice.
So if I'm understanding correctly, they didn't barrel age this.
I don't see that it's barrel aged at all. Yeah.
No, yeah, and I'm not tasting any barrel aging, which is what Imperial Stouts used to be. Now almost everything that's an Imperial Stout is barrel aged.
Yeah, this says Narwhal Imperial Stout is midnight black, not and very bold, with notes of baker's chocolate, dark roasted coffee, and it's a massive Imperial Stout, complex. And explores the dark depths of malt flavors. So from what I am guessing,
I'm definitely tasting the baker's chocolate.
They just did all dark, dark malts to see how deep they could go. And that's fantastic.
They went deep.
Yeah. Good old Sierra Nevada, the guys over there.
Well,
I'd buy a six of this. This isn't bad.
I mean, you hold it up to the light and you can't see through
it. Oh, yeah, yeah. It reminds me of the early days of Obsidian, how that
like
was.
It's like black. Yeah.
Yeah, good beer. I'm digging it. Well, good. All right. Well, you and I have an interview here with the gentleman that owns, I guess he's the CEO and one of the owners of the Indy Pass.
Yes.
Doug Fish. So let's put Doug on.
Hey, this is Jason from the Tin Beers, and I'm here with Gary. and Doug Fish from IndyPass. And so, Doug, I appreciate you joining us on the podcast to talk a little bit about the IndyPass. We've been plugging this thing for a few weeks now about this pass because we just ran across it. So why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners and tell us a little bit about the IndyPass.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. It's great to be on the podcast today. My name is Doug Fish, and I'm the founder and president of the IndyPass. The IndyPass is a multi-resort, multi-mountain pass that has 59 partner resorts across the U.S. and 28 states and provinces. And these resorts are all small to mid-size, independently owned and operated. A lot of them are family-owned and operated mountains. None of them are affiliated with any of the large corporate operations like Vail or Alterra. And the pass currently, today, sells for $199, and it gets you 2 days at each resort. Not 2 days, but, 118 days if you, want to put the miles in at 59 resorts. And you buy the pass online at our website, indieskipass.com. We don't issue a pass. We'd have to add another $10 to the cost of the pass if we sent you a physical pass. So you just go to the ticket window, you show them your driver's license, and they look up your account, and then they deduct 1 day from your account, and they issue you a day ticket. And it works really slick. We have 4 resorts out of the 59 that have blackouts. 2 of them are here in the Northwest, Mission Ridge and Silver Mountain. The other 2 are in the upper Great Lakes states. But, everything else is blackout free, from opening day till closing day. You can go any day and redeem 2 free tickets. You also, if you want to ski a third day, at any of those resorts, you can buy a discounted ticket for 25% off. So that's pretty much how it works. We have a kids ticket for $99. And if you're a season pass holder at any of our resorts, you can buy the adult pass for $129.
Wow, fantastic. So
that's the quick tour of the IndyPass, and we have some fantastic resorts on it.
Yeah, you do. So we've been plugging this thing. So our listeners primarily are in the Pacific Northwest, and many of them ski, and so most of them drink beer or are affiliated with the beer business. I'm fascinated because a lot of these places that you have down are very, very accessible to the Portland markets. I look specifically at White Pass and Mission Ridge. You can actually get there by train if you didn't want to drive up that way. Hurricane Ridge is up that way. Hoodoo is fairly close. These little independent ski resorts, how did you choose Independence? And, I guess Gary and I were talking prior to the show. What was the catalyst about, hey, we need a pass for independent ski resorts?
Yeah. Well, about 3 years ago, when Alterra was formed and they came out with the Icon Pass, they basically did a roll-up of a bunch of Aspen Ski Company resorts and several resorts that were on the Max Pass at the time. There was a pass called the Max Pass. When Alterra was formed, a lot of those resorts, kind of fell off the Alterra program. Some of them aligned with Vail and the Epic Pass, but it left a handful of others kind of independent. And we started my partner and I we own a marketing agency in Portland, and we started thinking maybe there's room for a third pass in the market. And the more we got into it, the more we realized that there wasn't really a room for another pass that would compete with Epic and Icon, but rather there was a huge gap in the market for these small to mid-size independent resorts that are really hidden gems. I've been skiing on Mount Hood since 1963. And I've skied all over the West, and with the Indy Pass, I've been able to get out east and up in the Great Lakes states. And, you know, I've skied big resorts, I've skied small resorts, and I've really come to the conclusion that the big resorts are great, you know, love all the terrain. I don't like the posers. And I don't like paying, you know, $200 a day for a lift ticket, $20 for a hamburger, and on and on and on. And, you know, you go to one of these smaller hills, the snow's just as good, if not better. The terrain's just as good. There may not be as much of it, but... and you may not have a high-speed six-pack with a heated seat, but, you know, I can get plenty of vertical in riding a, you know, an old two-seater. I'm done by noon either way, right? And so I came to the conclusion that, you know, most people don't know that. You know, I mean, you guys are hardcore skiers, and you know that, you know, you can have a fantastic day at a place called Hurricane Ridge, but, you know, the average skier only goes a few days a year, and they've never heard of Hurricane Ridge, okay? You go to a Warren Miller movie, and maybe that's your entire exposure to, you know, ski marketing. Well, Hurricane Ridge is not going to be on the Warren Miller film, you know, anytime soon. And if you pick up Ski Magazine and you look at the back cover, I mean, you're not going to see an ad for... Silver Mountain, Idaho. Okay. So the average casual skier, you know, as far as they're concerned, there's only 50 resorts in the whole country, you know, and they're all big brands and, you know, great resorts. But the little guys, they don't have those multi-million dollar marketing budgets to reach deep into the skiing community and let those casual skiers know, hey, it's great here. And so consequently, you know, these small resorts, they just market to their season pass holders and their local communities. And maybe they reach out a little bit beyond there, you know, get a little regional audience. But that's it. And so we saw this gap that casual skiers weren't hearing about these incredible smaller resorts. And the small resorts weren't able to tell their story effectively. So we created the Indy Pass, and it's called the Indy Pass. It's named after independent resorts. And I hit the road in the winter of 2018. I took off, or no, 19. I left Portland on February 1st, and I was on the road for 28 days. I did a huge loop. Up into Washington, Montana, down through Wyoming, Utah, Southern Cal, and up the coast. And by the time I got done, I visited over 20 resorts, and we had 10 commitments, 10 resorts signed on. And that's how the Indy Pass was born.
That's amazing. Amazing story. I think we've said it on the podcast multiple times, and I know Gary 100% agrees that a beautiful bluebird day on Hoodoo when the snow is perfect is just as good as Mount Bachelor, Mount Hood, Big Sky. I mean, wherever you're going, I mean, it's just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And I bet a good day at White Pass is the exact same way. So, I mean, it's smaller.
White Pass is incredible. It's incredible. I mean, nobody can use more than 2,000 acres. I mean, I defy someone to ski 2,000 acres, you know, in a day and use it all up. It's just not possible. And, I mean, it really came home for me when I visited Jackson Hole. I used to go out to, you know, and I made a trip out to Idaho, and then I hit Jackson and Targhee, kind of in a, you know, double thing, and, you know, do a long weekend, and I did that about three times, and I'd stay at Targhee because it's cheaper, And but I'd get over to Jackson and ski Jackson. It's amazing. I mean, you know, 4,000 feet of vertical and or whatever it is, and you know, I don't know how many acres, 3,000, 4,000 acres. Amazing place, and the backcountry is incredible. But I'd stay at Targhee, and you know, they got three chairs and immense terrain and incredible snow. And a really cool little lodge and a great bar and restaurant. And I just realized, you know, this is way more fun and you know, mm-hmm. a fraction of the cost. And, you know, I got the Tetons are right there. You know, Jackson is just on the other side of the Tetons. You may be, you know, 20 miles away as the crow flies. And it just, you know, it hit me, man. This is way more fun and way more my style, you know. But, you know, some people want to have a sushi bar and a disco and a spa to go with their ski experience. And, you know, they can get that at these big resorts. If you're there to ski and, you know, talk to other skiers and hang out, you know, with people that are really there for the authenticity of the sport, then these indie resorts are way more your style.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I just what you just said summed up my experience in Montana out of Bozeman. Is I went to Big Sky, paid the $200 for a lift mm-hmm. ticket, really struggled to ski half of the resort and to get fitted all in. Went the next day to Bridger, skied the entire thing, and had a better time. And for half the price.
That's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Bridger is an incredible place, and Big Sky, you know, it's big. There's no question. It's phenomenal. But I have a much better day at Bridger. And, you know, you sit on the chairlift a little bit longer, but they have twice as many chairs on the cable. So you get just as many runs in. And, you know, that's a really good example, Bridger and Big Sky.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of these resorts. So in the Pacific Northwest, you've got a handful here. We've talked Hurricane Ridge. We've talked White Pass. Mission Ridge is just a little bit up. Silver Mountain. Mm-hmm. Hoodoo, of course, here in Oregon. Is there anything else in Oregon mm-hmm. besides Hoodoo?
No. You know, someday we hope to have somebody from Mount Hood. We'd love to get Mount Ashland someday on the pass. But we, you know, the Northwest has a real – Willamette Pass, they'd be great. The Northwest has a real high concentration of resorts for the Indy Pass, and we sell a lot of passes, particularly in the Puget Sound area and Spokane. If you get up into Canada, we've got Sasquatch now, just a little ways north of Mount Baker. We've got Apex Mountain, which is a great mountain in the Rockies up there, and then Castle Mountain a little farther east in Alberta. And then 49 degrees north and Silver Mountain are kind of bookending the Spokane Coeur d'Alene market. We've got Lost Powder Trail, Montana, just maybe 90 minutes to the east of Silver. Maybe it's a couple hours. And then you start dropping south, Brundage Mountain, an incredible place, outside of McCall, Idaho. And then a little farther east is Red Lodge, Montana. Amazing snow, terrain, and just a really cool little town called Red Lodge, Montana. From there, you know, you can drop down into Wyoming. We have three resorts in Wyoming now with Antelope Butte, White Pine, and Snow King at Jackson. So if you want to go
That's
to Jackson Hole.
Antelope Butte's my hometown one. So.
Oh, really? Oh, cool.
Yeah,
they just added. They're the latest Indy Pass resort to join the program this year. They just came on board
fantastic.
A couple weeks ago, and what a great story, you know, community resurrected that place, and you know, it's got some phenomenal terrain. A little farther south of them is White Pine, Wyoming, a north, it's all north facing slope, so holds the snow, great tree skiing, a lot of glades there. And then, we got Beaver Mountain over in Utah, which is just an awesome little place, about 800 acres of, Utah snow. And then we have China Peak down in the Sierras, and Mount Shasta down in Northern Cal.
That's fantastic. Yeah, huge lineup, huge list. I see there's lodging options on some of them, which is always good for the listeners when they're going to drop in and ski. So best beer scene of these places. Like, we focus on beer. We talked about that. Who's got the best craft beer?
Oh, man. I can tell you, I'm not sure. They all have good beer. But I can tell you that Brundage won't pour anything but local beer.
Fantastic.
Local craft beer. Yeah, so they're real diehards about it. And, if you're a beer drinker, I don't think there's a indie resort in the country where you're not going to be able to find something interesting and delicious.
Wow, that's fantastic. That's good. Yeah, I know we were talking to the folks up at Hurricane Ridge, and they have no beer connection versus Mission Ridge, Badger Mountain Brewing, who we had on the podcast, absolutely has the beer contract for Mission Ridge and brews every year for them. So we love those connections and those local stories. So
yeah. Well, I know there's a lot of them out there. These small resorts are aligning with small breweries, and it's a natural fit. It's a great marriage, and I'm sure your listeners will agree that there's just all kinds of great discoveries out there.
Absolutely. Gary, what do you got, bud?
When you look at the Indy Pass itself, and how it was brought about, how do you intend on keeping that focus on these small areas and making sure that it doesn't extend out past just the independents?
Well, we kind of have a rule right now. You can't be on the Indy Pass if you're part of Epic, Vail, Boyne, or Powder Corp. Those are the big four. There are a couple of other smaller corporate groups that own small to mid-size resorts, and we've talked to a couple of those guys, some resorts in our group are part of two or three resort families, so to speak, but we're going to stay true to the genre. We've got some rather large resort back east. Jay Peak just joined us this year. They're quite a large resort. They're one of the largest in the Northeast. They've got 2,000 housing units at the base. They've got a huge water park. It's they get more snow than anybody in the Northeast, and it's a big mountain, particularly for that part of the country. But they're independent. Mm-hmm. They're not part of a big corporate conglomerate. They pride themselves on their independence. Another one is Cannon Mountain in New Hampshire. It's a big hill. They've got one of the best race venues I've ever seen. They've got a tram, and they're state owned. They're owned by the state of New Hampshire, so they keep their prices down. Okay. And they're independent. They act like an independent. They were named by Ski Magazine as one of the top five independent resorts in the country. So, that's kind of the criteria. Our goal is to have an Indy Pass resort within a reasonable drive of every skier in North America. And we think that that's going to be somewhere around 75 or 80 resorts, if we can achieve that goal.
Right. That's fantastic. So when you look at the the whole program and everything that's going on, and with COVID hitting now, mm-hmm. do you see a lot of these independents actually benefiting from COVID?
Well, I don't know if anybody's actually benefiting. I know they're, you know, for the most part, people are selling more season passes this year. And I think they're going to sell more day tickets if they can fit people in.
Right.
But what they make up for more, you know, by selling more lift tickets, they're going to lose by not being able to sell more beer, you know, or burgers, or, you know, their retail operations are going to suffer just because they have to, you know, really keep those parts of their business restricted. You know,
gotcha.
you go up to Timberline, okay, on Mount Hood, and they've got more capacity on the mountain than they could ever fit in their parking lot. So they're naturally, you know, limited in terms of their capacity. And they just announced last week, you know, they're not on the Indy Pass, but they announced last week, hey, when the parking lot's full, we're full. So, you know, no reservations, get here early. And, you know, for the most part, Indy resorts, they're not selling out on the weekend. They're not filling up. And so capacity has never been an issue and probably isn't going to be this year. There are a few who will be restricting their visits. Mission Ridge is one. They're going to have a reservation system, but most of them aren't because they don't have to. You know, they're naturally not crowded.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how COVID impacts the smalls. I know in the brewing scene, certainly they're impacted because they're forced to shut down. The nice thing about being a ski resort is you have nice open spaces and people can kind of still do what they need to do versus like rentals and some of the in-lodge activities may be impacted.
Yeah.
But for small guys like Hurricane Ridge, that doesn't really play a part. I mean, oftentimes the rental areas in the town as you head up the mountain.
Yeah. And I think, you know, people who, you know, want to go up, take two runs, go into the lodge, have a cocoa and hang out, you know, they're probably not going to have as good a time as maybe they used to. But if you're there to ski and, you know, you get your gear up in the car and you go up and you get your ticket and you ski, then, you know, the experience isn't going to really be any different. You know, I think that Indy resorts are going to do just fine this year. And, you know, that over the summer, you know, outdoor recreation just exploded, you know, fishing, biking, golf, tennis, camping, you know, all of that, you know, was way up. You know, participation was way up. Sales of gear were, you know, really good. And so, you know, we think that's going to translate to the winter because, you know, let's face it, during the winter, you can't do any of those things. And, you know, skiing and snowboarding is, you know, one of the only things that you can do. So, you know, the demand is going to be there. And if these resorts can figure out a way to keep people from, you know, keep people safe when they're in the base area, then I think it's going to be a real good year.
Yeah, totally. All right, a few rapid fire questions for you to close this thing out. So what are you skiing on right now?
Well, I've got a Quiver. I've got a pair of Armada Invictus for my kind of all-mountain ski. I've got a pair of Atomic Bent Shetlers for powder. And I just ordered a pair of Atomic Bandage TI-90s for unpissed hard stuff, which I found to be very prevalent when I go back east. So I've got that Quiver, and I just ordered a new pair of Atomic Hawk boots.
Fantastic. Good. Favorite beer you've had in the last 30 days, besides the one in your hand?
Oh, I would have to say Deschutes Pale Ale. That's
perfect.
My all-time favorite.
And a Bluebird day, where are you skiing?
Bluebird day, where am I skiing? Well, it's pretty hard to beat Mount Bachelor on a Bluebird day with fresh tracks if you can get to the summit. Going off the backside of the summit at Mount Bachelor on a powder day is pretty tough to beat. But you know what? If you have a Bluebird day and fresh powder, I don't care where you are. You're going to have a good day.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. So, Doug, well, we appreciate your time, man. So, again, this is huge. I think the listeners will enjoy this. I know we're extremely interested in the Indy Pass and very, very interested in seeing many of the ski resorts that you've got here, not only in the Pacific Northwest, but out of the area. So, again, I appreciate your time, man. You have a great Thanksgiving.
Hey, thank you, Jason and Gary. It's been a pleasure, and I hope you guys have a great season.
All right, we're back.
It's a good little interview.
Yeah. Big thanks to Doug over there of the Indy Pass. Thing sounds fantastic. We've been plugging this thing for a little bit of time here, and definitely learned a lot in that interview.
And it's, you know, he kind of, what he did originally to get all this set up and what he's currently doing to bring on more of the smaller areas reminds me a lot of like what Warren Miller did in the early days, just traveling around all these areas to ski them. So it's like he's the Warren Miller of passes, not doing the filming side of it, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, I dig the whole Indy vibe thing and traveling around, little road show, getting people on board. I mean, that was awesome. So, well, we have to try to get one of those passes here, so especially if these ski resorts are open.
Definitely.
I do know that we've got some fantastic guests scheduled where... Hoodoo wants to come on the show and talk a little bit about Hoodoo, and they're obviously on the Indy Pass.
Yep.
We've got Frank from Hurricane Ridge scheduled to come on the show. And then we've also got White Pass that we talked about a while ago.
Yes.
So we'll be listening to that bad boy too. So
yeah.
So we're a little out of order with how we recorded some of these interviews based upon what we've talked with people. But we thought we'd start with this Indy Pass because Doug is the mastermind behind this thing. And
right.
Then we'll plug the individual ski areas after that. I was kind of thinking about heading up to Hoodoo and trying to schedule the interview up there in person.
That'd be sweet.
That'd be awesome.
That would be
base.
Cool. Yeah. So, do some skiing, sit down, talk about the area, drink some beer.
Yeah, I think that'd be badass. So, but anyways, again, anything you learn in that thing that you didn't know? Other than the guy, like, just sounds like a wicked skier.
He does sound like a pretty damn good skier. No, I don't think that I learned anything new. Except for the fact that one of the biggest areas on the East Coast is independently owned.
Right.
Which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah, I think super interesting. But one of those things where, again, in the age where a lot of these small places are getting bought up.
Right.
And especially the ones that are kind of infamous. So, like, Crystal's been infamous for a long time.
Exactly.
And got bought up by Vail. I mean, that's... huge. So,
yeah. And a lot of these big names or these big conglomerates go in and they literally just gobble up entire areas, like not just the ski area, but like the entire area around it and surrounding areas all get absorbed into that conglomerate. So now it's all one pass gets you access to all of them.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like we talked about Bachelor, and Bachelor's got this variable type ski pass thing going on where holidays are like $150 and like non-peak days, midweek are like $100.
Yeah.
But they do this weird variation type thing, which is cool. It kind of makes sense because it'll flush some people out. Plus, give the resort some extra money if they're going to jam pack people.
Right.
But man, skiing is expensive. Jesus.
Oh, God.
Right?
It's gotten astronomically expensive.
Yeah, and so as those big resorts, which are awesome and they offer a lot of terrain, really start jacking prices, it's going to push people towards the Indies. And the Indies aren't that expensive.
No, they're really not.
It's a good deal. So,
and Doug brought this up in the interview, is from a terrain standpoint and a snow standpoint, there's really not much difference. There's just more acreage at these bigger areas.
Yeah, and I find myself a bachelor, like not being able to. I mean, I could, but I'm skiing all the runs like once versus skiing something over and over and over, especially finding something I like and skiing it over and over and having a good time with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, again, to each their own on the whole ski thing, but I kind of like a blend. Some small indie places are cool, and then try some other stuff as well, like some of the bigger stuff where I'm trying some different terrain or pushing myself. So, but anyways, all right, man. Well, what do you think of this narwhal as we've been sitting here sipping this bad boy?
Once you get past the initial drink of it,
it's
fantastic. Opens up nicely. Great flavor, good balance. Love the color. I mean, literally, you hold it up to a light, can't see through it. It's nice and dark. It's a good winter beer.
I think so, too. It's fantastic. So I'm looking at a copy of this Beer Brewing Magazine. It's Craft Beer Brewing Magazine.
Okay.
And this is the October-November issue. So should be coming off shelves here real soon. But they've got how they rated a bunch of stouts, and they call them dessert beers.
Okay.
So I thought we'd go through this as we're sipping on this stout. And the number one beer, which is actually a beer I included in my advent calendar. I had no idea that it was the highest ranked.
Ooh.
So that bad boy's in there. And it's not being done on Christmas Eve, which was one of my days. I did something different. But this one scored 98 out of 100 points.
Damn.
Yeah. So that's a good little beer. Firestone Walker's Nitro Merlin Stout. So,
I've heard good things about that beer.
Yeah, I had the Merlin Stout. I just haven't had a Nitro, especially in a can. So
I'm thinking Nitro just adds that creaminess to it.
Yeah. And they've got a Jester King's Brewery Necrolith. I know the guys over at the Craft Beer Podcast or the Portland Beer Podcast.
Yeah.
They love Jester King. They always talk about Jester King.
Huh.
So I see that's in there, and I'm just kind of browsing through this thing. And a lot of great, great beers in here. Barrel-Aged Yeti by Great Divide is in here at 94 points.
What'd they barrel-age that in? Does it say?
It doesn't really say. Let's see. Well, remember, they always do like 100 different variations of this thing.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
So, and in this one, this is just straight oak. So,
oh, interesting.
The Goose Island Bourbon County Stout that I had earlier rated at 97 points. So, it's up there. And that was a pretty good beer. But like I said, it was a booze bomb, man.
Woo.
A lot of booze. So, trying to run through here. What else we got? Anything sticking out? I don't see many. And I got a lot of stout.
I mean, those are some high ratings. 97s and 98s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's some good crap. I'm just seeing if we see Narwhal in here. Ale Song Senor Rhino is in here. 91. That's one of my favorites.
Hmm.
Our boys over at Ale Song. Let's see what else we got. So, I mean, I guess when you're looking at a dessert beer or a bourbon barrel stout, the idea is, what are you looking at, right? Because some people like the heavy oak. Some people like to try something they haven't tried before. You can get into this narwhal with Sierra Nevada, and it's pretty straightforward, very, very rich and malty, but none of those boozy notes. So,
no.
And it's pretty good, man. So, anyways, Ex Novo's in here with Kill the Sun Coffee and Chocolate. So, that's actually a really, really good beer. Ecliptic's Tiramisu Stout is in here.
Ooh.
So, and I saw that's actually in the stores right now.
Yeah.
So you can pick that bad boy up.
We've had that one before. It's pretty
have
decent.
We?
Yes, we have.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
There you go. With so many beers, I kind of forget. Yeah, I don't see very many else ones I picked in my my advent calendar for you guys, but I will say that the number one beer right there.
Bam, there it is.
Yeah. Now, Merry Christmas to all you guys.
There it is. Us other three guys are going to enjoy that beer.
Oh, I'll enjoy it too.
Right? Oh, you've got it in yours too. So, yeah, absolutely.
So, all right, man. Well, so what else is going on with you? How's the beer going?
You know, I thought it was going to be ready for bottling this weekend, and it decided otherwise.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It's the yeast is still working on the sugar. I thought I had it pegged in at 1.01, I think, 6, and I checked it again today, and it was down to 1.015.
Wow.
So it's still chugging
still
along.
Still just doing its thing.
Yeah, still doing what it needs to.
And the temperature's holding out okay?
The temperature's holding perfectly. It's crazy how switching out that faulty cord has made being able to hold those temperatures spot on. It's actually very nice, especially with the temperature fluctuations we've had over the last couple of days.
Well, I just threw something else at you right there. Interested to see what your thoughts are on
another
this.
Dark beer.
Well, this one's a little bit lighter, so.
Is it?
It truly is. You know me. I don't drink anything less than...
Ooh, that's good. We've had this before, have we not?
No, not at all.
Is this not a hazelnut brown?
No, it's not.
What is it? It's got hazelnut in it.
This is by Lost Coast Brewing, so out of Eureka, California.
Okay.
And Lost Coast did a peanut butter chocolate milk stout.
Oh, my God.
Any ideas what the ABV is?
I can't even guess with that flavor.
5.6%.
That's it, huh?
That's it, yeah.
That's
it's,
fantastic.
It's malty, and I think it's the lactose in it that kind of gives it that body.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely tastes the peanut butter.
Yeah.
Which I mistake for hazelnuts for some reason. God, it's so roasty flavor with that peanut butter.
Oh, yeah. The peanut butter's like really, really up
now
front.
Now, this is a dessert wine or a dessert beer.
Yeah, it totally is. Yeah, it's, again, that lactose. They've got to put lactose in it because
that's
there's
fantastic.
Some body and some residual sweetness that just is there. And you got the peanut butter. And then you got some chocolate. Yeah.
Well, and the lacing on the glass is really good, too.
Yeah. Well, I figured
it's impressive
you'd enjoy that,
beer.
So.
Yeah.
You might see that one here in the next 24 days or so.
Ooh. Well, alrighty then.
That might be one that I bought extra just to bring out. So I did run across a guy, another beer distributor.
Yeah.
And he actually gets beers from all of these accounts that he goes to.
Okay.
And one of the beers that he got, or several of the beers he got, are like kind of like when I went up to Bailbreaker.
Oh, yeah.
And I brought back a bunch of stuff that was unlabeled.
Yep, kind of experimentals.
Yep, so he gave me 4 experimentals, silver bullets, as he called them. And so we have no idea what they are. I know what they are. One's Crush, and there's a couple other ones. They're all IPA-based. But anytime I see this guy, he's like, oh, I'm just going to load you up because I get all this stuff I can't use, and I'm not drinking beer because I'm not doing carbs right now.
Yeah.
But I'll give it to you guys. And I'm like, oh, we'll try experimental beer. No problem.
We're all over it.
Yeah. So we might be going on an IPA kick here for a little bit. But
all right.
But we've got a bunch of experimental stuff. Some of it's Reuben. Some of it's Ex Novo. So we'll see what it looks like.
That should be a fun little experiment.
Yeah, well, the nice thing is we have no idea what the hell it is.
No, that's the beauty of it.
Yep. So it'll be tough to talk about it. I mean, I think there's some names imprinted on the bottom of the can.
Okay.
But outside of that, yeah, no labeling, just silver bullets. So.
Huh.
But, yeah.
So we'll be going off our sensory only on what those beers are.
Totally going off sensory only.
No preconceived notion because of a name. Nothing.
Nothing. Yeah, nothing at all. So, well, man, I think that pretty much wraps it up for the night. So I would say We look forward to doing some of the upcoming interviews with our folks over at White Pass and the folks over at Hoodoo. I think those would be great interviews.
Very definitely.
And again, look for future podcast episodes. Again, on Acast, iTunes, all those places. It's where this one's posted. Big thanks to Doug out there from Indie Pass. And we will talk to you later. Tim Beers.
Tim Beers.
Thanks for listening to the Portland Tim Beers Podcast. Be sure to visit the Portland Tim Beers Podcast on acast.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic bonus content. If you love the Tim Beers Podcast, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes. Until next time, Tim Beers.